make it short and share a few experiences I have had as a Minister for Health. And in the African context, we tend to refer to it as Minister of Health rather than Minister for Health. My presentation outline, as you see, will begin with the purpose, my data sources, the methodology, the learning objectives, why decentralization, and the background of decentralization in Ghana, the creation of the so-called district assemblies. We look at the objectives of decentralization and the typologies of decentralization. Talk maybe 1 or 2 minutes about the theoretical framework for the presentation, and conceptualize the issue of the case of decentralization in Ghana, and look at objectives of the health reforms, and give you some information on the Ghana Health Service and the Teaching Hospitals Act, and also discuss the problems of implementing what is the purpose of this presentation? Is to analyze and share with public health practitioners the experiences of a former health minister of the Republic of Ghana in reforming the health system. As he's already indicated to you, I happen to be the former Minister for Health of Ghana. My data sources are government documents relating to the decentralization policy that began in 1989, the Ghana Health Service and Teaching Hospitals Act 1996, commonly referred to as Act 525. Again, several interviews with officials, current and former officials, NGOs, FBOs, and CBOs, and consultants from the London School of Economics. It's very important here because most of the reform consultant assignments were carried out by experts from the London School of Economics and individuals from DFID, the Department for International Development, the British International Development Agency. The methodology, as you see, is a descriptive analysis of primary and secondary data supplemented by participant observation. The learning objectives, one, to describe the socio-political and economic underpinnings of decentralization and health sector policy reforms in Ghana, to analyze the decentralization and health sector policy reform strategy, and three, analyze the socio-political factors that impeded the full implementation of the decentralization and health sector reform policy in Ghana. Why decentralization? As most of you would know, at the Alma-Ata conference, there was a proclamation on the principles of primary health care that advocated the need to take health care services closer to the people, and it became the buzzword in terms of implementing primary health care. In 1983, the African governments formulated the district health policy in Harare, Zimbabwe, and that was to promote coherent health services and also to bring these health services closer to the people. Also, around 1983, the recognition of the district health system as providing the best chances of implementing primary health care as enshrined in the Alma-Ata Declaration. This declaration was incorporated in the 1987 Harare Declaration signed by 22 African countries. Again, on the issue of why decentralization, in 1990, the International Conference on Popular Participation in Arusha, Tanzania, decentralization was listed as one of the 10 indicators to be used in assessing progress in popular participation on the African continent. Secondly, the push by international financial institutions and Western donors, especially during the Reagan era, to get developing countries to implement internal and at the same time structural adjustment programs, specifically the privatization of public enterprises. Then around 1993, there was a movement for health reform, including an emphasis on decentralization. Again, as was actively promoted in the World Development Report 1993, popularly referred to as Investing in Health. The WHO publications formulating strategies for health for all by the year 2000 also identified decentralization of health system structures as a key issue in providing health for everybody by the year 2000. Decentralization also took central stage in the discussions in public administration, that is the administration of the national government. This is what makes decentralization and administrative reforms in Ghana an issue that is worth studying. the historical background of decentralization in Ghana, this could be traced as far back as at the pre-independence period. You know, Ghana was the first sub-Saharan African to have attained independence from British colonialism. And between 1878 and 1951, the British tried one form of indirect rule or the other through chiefs. And from 1957, 1961, 1971, 1974, 1978, several attempts by various governments at decentralization had been tried. But in 1983, when former President Jerry Rawlings staged the so-called famous revolutionary coup, he made decentralization and power to the people, bringing power closer to the people, one of the major principles of the revolution. For those of you who do not are not familiar with the location of Ghana, this is the location of Ghana. It's on the West African coast, very close to Nigeria. To the northern part is Burkina Faso, to the east is Togo, to the west is Cote d'Ivoire, and to the south is the Gulf of Guinea or the Atlantic Ocean. It's a small country, about 92,000 square miles, with a population of about 22 million people. This is the administrative map of Ghana. Ghana is divided into 10 regions, as you can see here. In 1988, the government of Ghana, through the decentralization process, divided the country into 110 districts. And based on population growth, the districts were supposed to be assessed depending on population growth. So now the number of districts has moved from 110 to 138. And those of you who follow Ghanaian politics, just about 2 weeks ago, an additional 28 districts were created based on assessment of the population. Based on the successful district assembly elections, the government decided to extend decentralization exercise to the rural areas, to the towns and villages, and created what is referred to as unit committees. The 10 regions are administered by what the government refers to as the regional coordinating councils. What are the objectives of decentralization, the typical public administration theoretical aspects of decentralization? One, devolution of political and state power in order to promote participatory democracy through local level institutions. Two, devolution of administration, development planning, and implementation of the district assemblies, that is creating local government units. Three, introduction of an effective system of fiscal decentralization that would ensure the transfer of adequate financial resources from central government to local government with sufficient autonomy to allocate and utilize provision of socioeconomic services through composite budgeting. This has its historical roots. You know, in 1983, when Ghana embarked on economic recovery programs, what is commonly referred to as structural adjustment programs, there was emphasis on the effective and efficient management of the country's resources. And therefore, the argument was these arrangements could be properly implemented if government was broken down into smaller packets, brought closer to the people, and the whole process of centralization be de-emphasized. And finally, declaration of management and public-private partnerships and investments, that is to allow the private sector to also play its play a prominent role in national development. Again, I go through the typologies of decentralization. Those of you who follow the whole issue of decentralization, you know we have these typologies: one, deconcentration, delegation, devolution, and privatization. And in our cases, we are going to be talking a lot more about deconcentration and devolution, and to some extent, also discuss the whole question of privatization. Because one of the tenets and one of the requirements of structural adjustment programs instituted in 1983 was the issue of privatization, that is privatizing the so-called state enterprises that have proven to be unprofitable. The theoretical framework applied in this research is the decision space approach. Now, it talks about the principal-agent relationship that is between what was referred to as the Ministry of Health of Ghana, the Ghana Health Service and Teaching Hospitals Board. And I'll get to some of these some of these issues later on. So in the case of decentralization in Ghana, there were two competing concepts. One, devolution of major political and administrative responsibilities from central government to the district assemblies, and two, administrative and technical deconcentration as expected to be practiced by the Ministry of Health. What were the objectives of these reforms? To raise the efficiency level of the ministry, to provide effective interventions, to develop linkages with partners, and to improve equity of access to health and improve the quality of health care. As a result of this, the 10 regional administrations created 10 health administrations, 10 regional health administrations, and each of the 110 districts also created 110 health district administrations and sub-districts. And in addition to this, the Act 525 made provision for the Ghana Health Service and Teaching Hospitals Act. This required the breaking up of the Ghana of the Ministry of Health into a policy-making body, that is the ministry, and a new entity referred to as the Ghana Health Service, which was supposed to be the implementing arm of the Ministry of Health. The Ministry of Health makes policy, and the Ghana Health Service implements policy. And one of the reasons it was necessary to undertake these kinds of reforms was that, as you know, after colonialism, most of the institutions inherited were colonialist, especially the civil service. And looking at the kinds of crises we face in the health sector, in terms of remuneration, compensation, and developing incentives and packages for health sector, that could not be done because the health sector was part and parcel of the Ghana Health Service and of the Ghana Civil Service, and therefore whatever remuneration or fringe benefits packages were prepared for the ministry had to be prepared for other sectors within the civil service. So there was a need to create a service that was solely responsible for health delivery, hence Act 525. These are some of the arms of the Ghana Health Service. In fact, when we operationalize the entire act, this is what we get. At the top of it, at the national level, we have a Ghana Health Service Council, and then the chief executive of the Ghana Health Service, who is appointed by the president in accordance with the advice of the Ghana Health Service Council, a deputy director, and within the Health Council, the various divisions. And the various divisions had to have directors. Some of the divisions are the Health Administration and Support Services, Policy Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, Public Health Division, Institutional Care Division, Supply Stores, Drugs, Drug Management, Human Resources Development, and this is where the problem started. And I think I've made a point here that to look at this thing, you have to place it in the proper context. 2000 was a very important year for Ghana because there were national elections to elect the president and parliament, and that was to be the very first time in Ghana's history that a sitting president was going to be voted out of power, or going to retire, and an incoming government was supposed to take its place. Therefore, the decisions to implement this act took very serious political connotations, in the sense that as a minister, whether the extent of which you were successful in the party in power, the party I represented was successful, depended on the kinds of individuals we put in these places. So I was faced with the task of choosing between what is politically correct and what is so-called bureaucratic, technically also correct. How do you balance the two? Any misstep anywhere would create problems for the elections. So what did I do? I appointed a committee to investigate, to look at the act itself and look at how technically feasible we could be politically correct and also be bureaucratically and administratively and meritoriously correct. That was a challenge that personally I had difficulty in implementing. Make matters worse, because most of the consultants had come from London School of Economics, and because if you look at Act 525, it's totally patterned after the British National Health Service, I decided to go to Britain to study the health system. To my surprise, when I got there, and again, 2000 was an election year, And Mr. Blair's government was also looking at ways and means of correcting the health system. It came to my surprise that the British had also identified some problems in the very act that we had copied, and they were in the process of revising it. So though we considered our reforms as quite innovative reforms that were supposed to address our problems, the British from whom we copied had identified several flaws in the act they had implemented since 1948. So as a minister, what do I do? I couldn't do much. Unfortunately for me, the elections came in December 2000, and the political party which appointed me as minister lost the elections. And I'm not saying that my ability or inability to implement this program had anything to do with the loss of the elections. But fortunately, I didn't have to deal with this problem. But the good news was that most of the appointments had been done. And Ghana is following this structure. To the extent to which this has been successful, we are yet to decide. You know, we are yet to do the kinds of studies that will enable us to see, you know, how best we can correct the fault. But I have some. I saw some shortcomings in the implementation of the Act and what the Act was supposed to do for the country. One of the major shortcomings was emphasis on material aspects of at the expense of deeper human motivational concerns. Two, failure to address lethargy and apathy. Three, failure to consider the meaning of work and public service in a predominantly rural society where indigenous social and cultural values are important for understanding work behavior. Again, as you know, Ghanaian society as pre-modern, transitional, pre-capitalist, underdeveloped, and developing, as opposed to urbanized, modernized, industrialized, and developed. However, the nation adopted uncritically bureaucratic and managerial reforms, reform models that are better suited for industrialized society. So that's where we went wrong. We wholeheartedly copied what the British had been practicing since 1948, without adapting it to the peculiar circumstances of the country, and therefore run into all kinds of problems. So those of you who are familiar with Ghana and follow the Ghanaian experience, you will see that there's a Ghana Health Service, and most of the implementation aspects you see are the signboards that are sitting in front of hospitals, signboards which use the Ministry of Health, are now saying Ghana Health Service. But in terms of delivery of service efficiency, effectiveness, and the attendance to people's expectations, and fulfillment of people's aspirations, I do not think we are there yet. Thank you so much.